three singles.
The following program contains adult language and mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
One more time.
Hey everybody, welcome to One Song Each. I'm a Legal Machine, and with me is...
Mr. Fixit.
And Diablo Frank.
And today we're going to talk about One Song Each. Take it away.
Okay, so I'm going to go first this time, since I made your assholes go first last time. I picked the song, I'm going to play it first, and then I'll say why this song is so ingrained in my life. I've heard it a billion times. Frank was upset for the reason I was going to use it, but now understands why. So my song is Nine Inch Nails, Every Day is Exactly the Same.
I believe I can see the future. As I repeat the same routine, I think I used to have a purpose. Then again, that might have been a dream. I think I used to have a voice.
Okay, some quick background on it. It was a third single off the album With Teeth. It was released in 2006. The music video was directed by Francis Lawrence, but it was scrapped in post-production. It was never seen. The video that you can find online is just a studio video. Yeah. It was on like a CD, you know, some stuff like that. It's probably best known for appearing in the movie Wanted, mm-hmm. as far as cultural impact. There's only two people who actually play on the song. Trent Reznor does all the vocals and instruments except for the drums, which were performed by Dave Grohl.
Oh, wow.
As far as its chart presence, it managed to get to number one in Canada, 56 on Billboard, made it number one in the modern rock track section, though, number 12 on the mainstream rock track, number 48 in the pop 100, and number one as a dance single. In fact, it spent like 90 some odd weeks on their dance chart.
Okay, Frank gave me this CD.
Who got it from?
Oh, really? Oh.
I burned you the CD, buddy.
So, well, he gave it to me, and at that point, I had been in a very long-term relationship and had fallen into this weird, like, depression type thing. I wasn't depressed, but
melancholy?
I was just... Yes, melancholy. Thank you.
I think Ennui might be the one.
Okay, now you just got to Frank me in my own fucking song.
We got Encyclopedia Franked.
No shit. And anyway, so I was really in this weird place where I kind of sat there and I'm like, well, I guess this is the rest of my life. Like, this is just, you know, I'm going to end up marrying her and this is my job and, you know, these are my friends. And like, I think even then I wasn't hanging out with y'all as much. I think I kind of fell off the map.
It may not have been you. I think at that time period I was either at the sex shop, which meant I was up all night and sleeping all day. And so I was maybe not as available, or I might have been doing the labor job at that point, in which case I was very inaccessible during those years.
But even a lot of my other friends, I kind of like had started kind of letting them go. Like, I guess I just kind of fallen into this little trap of a world where I could not escape. And you had given me the CD. And I remember I think I was doing something in my room one day and I put it on, I'm listening to it, and this song played and it hit such a chord with me that I must have listened to it like 10 times that night. It was just, I heard it. The lyrics spoke volumes to me. And I remember thinking like, holy shit, I feel exactly like this. The song is describing my exact emotion and I don't know how to get out. And I sat there and it was just the weirdest feeling. And I kind of sat there for a minute and, you know, song's playing, hearing it over and over and over, and just kind of was like, fuck it, step back, and scorched earth my entire life from that point, ending relationships. And she wasn't a bad person. She was a very good person. I just realized that I was no longer growing. And this song reminded me that I did see the future because I did the same shit every fucking weekend. I had lost my voice. Like I had nothing to contribute. I was just a fucking mushroom sitting there. And this song was just so like enlightening to me. So I was like, I gotta do something. And I went from this just pillar of salt just sitting there. And then remember, that's when I was just fucking working out like a mad dog, and just I lost a shitload of weight, got in real good shape, was making good money, and I just turned into a fucking animal. Like just grabbed life by the pussy and went to town. And just I just remember I was having so much fucking fun. And it was nothing bad in that relationship. It's just like you get stuck in that rut, and you either sit there and then you just spend your rest of life there, or you say fuck it, throw it into different gear and try to see what's going to happen on the other end. Because I remember I was freaking out, because you know that relationship is all I had known. That was my longest relationship at the time. I was fairly new to a job that I wasn't sure if I was going to make it. I don't know, just everything to me changed in that year that song came out. And I remember I would go to the gym. Everything I did, I'd always had Nine Inch Nails there. I would always listen to the CD constantly, at least once or twice a week. And so one day I'm enjoying my single life, running around doing whatever I want, and a friend of mine says, hey, let's go to the movies, let's go see Wanted. And I'd already read the comic, so I'm like, yeah, sure. As soon as that song came on, fucking blew me away, because it took me back to when I first heard it, and I looked at where I was at that moment in my life, and I was like, totally got out of that rut. Like whatever that song, when that song found me, it reminded me that that's where you were, but look where you are today. Every once in a while we fall into those ruts, and this song is that song. If I feel like I'm falling into a rut, I start listening to it a little bit, and it just kind of reminds me, it's like, fuck it, throw it in another gear, see what happens. And that's it. And so this song has always kind of held a special place in my heart. Definitely top 10 for me, maybe even top 5, because it's just one of those songs. It's just, if I need to catch a breath in life, I put the song on, and it just reminds me, like, you know, these are the trappings, know what you got to do, and then that's it.
I know that I was working industrial work when that happened, because I had worked at a job where I was just killing myself, racing all the time, and I dropped a lot of weight. I put on weight while I was at the sex shop, and it took me forever to get that off. And I worked this one job in particular for a few months where it just bled off of me. And then I quit that job because I made a lot of good money off of it, because we worked a lot of overtime. And so once I finally left that job, I decided I was going to make some changes in my life, but I wanted to keep that weight off. So I'd gotten a gym membership, and I was going fairly regularly. And because it was good through a whole bunch of different gyms throughout the city, I would occasionally just drop into some random gym just to check it out. And so I'm in this weird part of town that I wouldn't normally be in. I just happened upon the gym. I go and I work out, and I'm usually pretty good about holding onto my stuff, my wallet, my keys, all that kind of stuff. But somehow I'd managed to forget my keys and lock myself out of my car. And so I was in the habit, because I could never get a hold of you when I wanted to call you, I would always call Pussycat, and she would put me in touch with you. So of course I call her, and she comes to pick me up. That's when she tells me, oh yeah, me and Fix It broke up. And then started telling me the whole story. I'm shocked, I'm dumbfounded, and I'm a little pissed off, because like, I'm one of Fix's best friends, and I'm hearing this from his girlfriend days, if not a week or so later. I knew nothing of this. I would not have called Pussycat if I had known this. And so then for like weeks, if not months afterward, I'm not hearing from you. You know, I see you a little bit, but like you said, you'd kind of disappeared after that, yeah, for a bit to try rat. To, you know, change things in your life and shit. And you're not confiding in me, and she is. And so I'm hearing nothing but her side of the story, getting more and more pissed at you, because you've not only left her, but to some degree, you've left me too. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on with this asshole? And I remember kind of reading you the Riot Act at one point after that. And I think you were a little offended. I remember one point in particular, you told me a story about how you and Fryhole were talking, and Fryhole had said, you know, when this happens, you got to pick sides. I'm either your guy or I'm their guy, and I'm your guy.
You're taking it to the mattresses.
Right. And then it's sort of like, oh, great. So Fryhole's your guy, but apparently I'm not your guy. You've made me not your guy, asshole. Never completely forgave you for that, but
I can tell.
Yeah. But eventually I realized, you know, at the end of the day, even though I'd see her side of things and I felt bad and everything, A, I didn't want to be her sounding board for the rest of her life, my life, whatever, for however, because this went on for months, I think. Really? Yeah. And I just started my relationship with Paquita, and it's like, I can't be spending hours on the phone when I've got a girl that's spending time with me now. She's not going to appreciate this stuff. At this point, it's getting to be rehashing. I'm tired of hearing all the bad stuff about my buddy. Whose side am I on? Am I on Pussycat's side, or am I on Fix-It's side? At the end of the day, I'm still on Fix-It's side. Whatever misgivings I might have had, given how things broke down, and the fact, again, you did not tell me, confide in me, anything.
I think you broke it up for
like a week plus, and you hadn't told me jack shit, and I get surprised being picked up from a gym.
Honestly, that's the first time I've ever heard that story. Yeah. You've never told me. I didn't want you to have to pick sides. I guess that's what my biggest concern. I knew Fryhole was already, his side was picked. The minute I brought it up, it's like, done. Don't worry about it. She died in a car accident as far as I'm concerned. You, I was like, fuck, because we'd always been the Three Amigos for so long, so I was like, fuck, I don't want to put him in the middle.
We did spend a lot of time together. By Three Amigos, you're meaning me, you, and Pussycat.
Yeah, and so I didn't want to.
I would only occasionally tag along.
Yeah. Whereas I spent most of those years without a vehicle, without much in the way of prospects, and And so I was the third wheel puppy dog who rode along with you guys.
True.
You were at the point in the relationship where you needed a spare person to kind of keep up the conversation and act as a buffer. It's like, so
sometimes,
it was mutually beneficial.
Yeah. But at that time, I was like, I didn't know how to deal with it. Like, I don't want to put him in the middle because I knew you would probably go my way, but I wasn't 100% sure because I was like, because I'm the one that initiated the breakup. Like, I'm the one that just kind of, I still remember breaking up with her, taking her to the restaurant. And she's like, this is a nice restaurant. I remember telling her, oh, you're not going to like this. And we sat down, we ordered dinner, and you would think you would wait till the end of dinner. And I was just like, fuck it. And I told her right there. So that was the most awkward dinner because it was between crying and her eating and then crying and eating. I was like, man, that was a really fucked up moment to do it. I should have really waited to the end. And
well, what's interesting to me is, so she was eating?
Yeah.
You'd think like, okay, I'm ending a relationship that's lasted longer than a decade. You'd think that might take away your appetite, but I was like,
we ordered pizza.
Wait, what?
We ordered pizza and I remember thinking like,
well, I mean, you did order pizza. So I guess if you're going to eat your way
in my defense, I have never returned to that restaurant. And that was one of my
That is
fucking
not true because you and nope. I went there and you told me this story.
Did we?
Yes.
Are you sure we didn't go to the other one?
I'm pretty sure it was the one.
No, I think we went to the other one. Dude, I haven't gone back to that one in a while.
Mm.
It might have been the other one. The other one
I heard this story the first time and I'm pretty sure it came up at the restaurant.
I don't remember taking it because I can't remember going.
Well, I definitely know which restaurant you're talking about now. Yeah. What I was thinking about is like, oh, no, now I definitely know which restaurant it is.
I go to the other one. Like, I'll still go because I got to get my pizza fix on, but I feel really weird walking in there because I remember walking out and feeling like such a douchebag. There could have been a better way to do this. I just didn't know how to do it. I didn't want to break up with her over the phone. I didn't want to do it at her house.
Is there a right way to end a decade plus?
Probably after the pizza.
Well, other than that, a little... You're semantic.
The problem is, like, with all the leftovers, who takes them home, really? Like, who's going to take home the leftovers?
Oh, I mean, you take the leftovers, for sure.
You know who's doing the breaking up when the leftovers are consideration, you know.
I was like, and I felt bad because again,
are you gonna finish that?
I feel bad because again, she wasn't a bad person. It was just we were in a rut.
Wait,
and
split the check, did you?
No, I fully paid. I made sure. But I remember thinking, like, because it's a learning experience. She was like my long term girlfriend.
Right.
There was a lot of things we should have done, but we never did because there was always an obstacle there. And I just remember, like, we're sitting at the restaurant, and I was like, damn, I should have waited to the end. And she just sat there shocked, and I apologized. She didn't want to talk. Pizza came. She would take a few bites, clean some tears up, take some more bites, and I'm like, I can't eat. Like, I don't know what to do here. And I mean, to her, you know, I gotta give it to her. She finished what she wanted to eat and we put some in the box and I said, would you like to go home now? And she's like, yes. And we walked to the car and, you know, I said, do you want to talk? And I know she was in shock and I felt really bad about that, but I was like, you know, this has to happen. And so I took her home and I remember I felt really weird. Like the whole way I was like waiting for her to hit me or strike me. I was like, either that or grab the steering wheel and throw us into traffic. I knew something was gonna go down. She had a tendency to go off the handle sometimes. And we drove. I think we got stuck in traffic.
She had a different Nine Inch Nails song playing in her mind.
Probably.
It's one of the more violent ones, I think.
The thing was, we never, our breakup wasn't a mean, I mean, later on, she was like, it was a good idea because she grew from it as well. Because she realized that, you know, we kind of had a rest of development type moment in our relationship where neither of us was progressing anymore. And she went completely different. I'm sure she's happy now. I hope she's happy. But it was just so weird. And so, like I said, when I'm sitting there at the movies with a friend of mine and that fucking the song comes on and the movie and he's in that same rut where the fucking ATM tells him to go fuck himself.
Yeah.
I started laughing out loud in the theater like fucking Robert De Niro from Cape Fear. And I mean, and people are like, why is he laughing? It's not that fucking fun. And I'm just like, holy shit. Came back around. Like, this is, I mean, I was just one of those fucking moments that I was, and I remember my friend was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Because I laughed for a good 10, 15 minutes. Like, that scene ended and it moved on and I couldn't stop laughing because it was one of those things where I had kind of gone through that transition where I had reached where I think I needed to be at that point and I was doing what I wanted to do and life was changing and I was running, like, building new relationships and this and that. And then to hear that song and kind of like, to hear it and just be reminded, like, remember where you were? Look where you're at now. Ain't it great? And I was just fucking like a moron laughing at that fucking moment.
The truth is I should have seen it coming. I think that your devotion to Fight Club, if nothing else, was a big, you know, red flag that maybe this guy is not content in his existence. And yeah, I was definitely kind of hurt and pissed off. I mean, you're the guy who says I'm your brother and then you're not fucking telling me anything.
Oh, dude, telling you, that was a fucking weird time. Dude.
I know. Well, and that's just it. Despite months of hearing the negatives about you and hearing her side of the story and spending time with her, ultimately, I was like, you know, I'm still Fixit's guy. She's a great girl. We had good times together as a trio. But ultimately, who am I in this for? Who is the person?
And I came to you later. I told you.
Yeah, once, I know. We hashed some of that shit out.
I was flying out,
and you gave me your side as well.
Once I was ready to put wheels to the ground, I made sure you were the first one I came to.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I was.
You guys were broke up a week plus before I even knew anything, and you were like fucking ghosting for weeks, if not months, after that.
Well, because I literally lived in the gym.
I get that. I get. But I'm saying, I guess when you so it's not like the first thing. It's like when you started to come back from the abyss. You might have given me a call, but you stayed in the abyss without me that entire time, and I didn't appreciate it. But ultimately, who do I want to still be in my life 20 years from now, 40 years from now? Who funeral do I want to attend, or vice versa?
Well, I tell you, dude, we're gonna be the crappy old guys that live in that condo that girls are like, oh, those are those creepy old fuckers that always stare at us. Yeah, no,
that's not Pussycat's fault, but the connection is between me and you. So ultimately, that's what it comes down to.
So that was a really strange time. I've never been in a rut like that since. A little bit close, but never like that, where I needed this song to kind of pull me out again. But I still, to this day, like, we heard it right now. I listened to it twice. I made you listen to it twice. Love the fucking song. Yeah. Love the fucking song. It kind of reminds me of the first time when I heard Jimi Hendrix, Purple Haze, or Hey Joe, where it's kind of like that one song that just sticks with me. And I know it's going to be with me the rest of my life. Easy. Rest of my life. And I'm done.
Great album. So underrated. Is insane how underrated that album is. I don't know why it's so underrated. I don't know if it's just a weird period of time when Nine Inch Nails put out a random album and people were like, whoa, what the hell?
Well, I remember Frank telling me it was more of it was very poppy. So remember, you're like, this really popped to it. And I was like, I never thought about that. But I remember, I love it. Honestly, this is by far my favorite song off that album, but the entire album is perfect. I love the whole album.
A situation where Reznor had gotten further and further away from doing rock music. He was doing more score stuff. I don't know that he'd really gotten that deep into the scores at that point in time, but he was doing more instrumentals like The Fragile and such. Mm-hmm. Further away from doing like anything that could be considered particularly commercial. And then With Teeth comes around and it's much more commercial, much more poppy. And so I think that the hardcore guys were put off by the poppiness of it. But also I think that the culture had moved away from, because I mean, they're associated with grunge, even though they're not grunge either. They're industrial. But the culture had moved away from the type of music that they were producing. So even though the album was a success, even though there were a lot of popular singles, it was definitely a revival for the band. But I don't think that the audience was there for them the way that they had been in the 90s. And it's absolutely a great album. I think it sounds great today as well as it did, 13 years ago, whatever it was when it came out.
Ooh,
so
that long? Good it's, Lord.
Yeah. 2006.
Anyway, where was I during this time? I think I was I was freaking colleging my ass off. The three of us were probably on a bit of a hiatus.
A little bit. We weren't spending as much time together then, no.
After 06, that's when we all started hanging out more and more together again. Because up to then...
No, actually, I think I was pretty absentee for a number of years around then. So let's see.
No, it was around 06. Remember?
I was in and out.
We would go to your house and you would be... The computer, you had the TV there.
Yeah. I mean,
that big container of anal lube, or what was it? Some kind of weird sexual gel.
I don't know for sure. I mean, I've had lubes around the house for years.
I just remember we walked in and she looked at the time when I was still with Pussycat, I just remember we sat down on the couch. She looked over and she goes, is that what I think it is? I'm like, don't touch anything. I don't know what's going on.
That's a story for another time, I think. Matter of fact, I think we're ready to move on. Do you want to do your song? Or am I doing my song? What are we doing?
Yeah, I'll do mine.
Okay.
Mamma mia, whoopies pizza from the forgetful Franco of Italia.
Oh, forgetful Franco, your pizzas make me tango.
Whoopies, so mouth-watering pizzas with double of everything.
Visit Whoopies, Coromangla, opposite Raheja Arcade, or call 4655-9999 for delivery today. Open 6 November.
Mamma mia, Whoopies pizza.
Forgetful Franco makes every pizza whopping.
All right, man, you want to do a one song each? What do you want to do?
Sure. When you texted me, I was like, oh, shit, I still haven't figured out what I'm going to do as a song.
Ah, Jesus.
So I laid in bed. I thought about it for a second. He's like, okay, this one will work. And this will be a quickie. It'll be an easy one. And then, of course, it unspooled. It's like, oh, I hope this isn't going to be long. We'll see how it goes. You know, hopefully it doesn't like get out of control.
I had two to choose from. Let me think. Yeah, if this is going to be tacked on to Mr. Fix-Its, then I figured out which one because it's much, much shorter. The other one's actually got a story, and then I'm pretty sure you would riff off it, too, and it would be very long. So I'll save that for another time.
Sounds like a plan.
You know this song. Of course you do. This is Art School Girlfriend by Stone Temple Pilots.
Cool, cool.
Which is a fantastic song. Do I need to do some research on this album at all?
Not necessarily. Do they ever do a music video for that one? I'm thinking not,
good
right?
Good question.
Because that was never a single, yeah?
I don't know. I don't know what's a single and what's not.
I don't think that got radio play at all. I'm pretty confident that was strictly album. It's just we both had the album and it got a lot of play at the comic shop, so that's probably why we think it maybe got more prevalence than it ever actually had.
Okay, well, hey everybody. My song is... Hold on, let me make sure.
sure.
I always call it art school girlfriend. It's art school girl.
Mm-hmm. Well, because he says art school girlfriend in the fucking song. Because
he says
song.
Art school. Exactly.
I hate when they do that. It's like, it's cool if you want to do the whole thing where you don't actually feature the title of the song in the song, but don't do shit where what you sing is not the title of the song, because you're just going to fuck everybody up. That's how that always works. We always say what you sang, not the fucking bullshit, you know, abbreviated version. We're not adding the parentheses. Just fucking name the song.
Just name the song already. But yeah, so this song, Art School Girl, is from Stone Temple Pilots' record Tiny Music, Ellipses, song from the Vatican Gift Shop from 1996. I love this song. This is like one of the more toe-tapping tracks on any Stone Temple Pilots album that anytime this song comes on, I gotta listen to it all the way through. I can't stop listening to it. So this came out in the late 90s. I was in art school, and it was just class after class of art, knowing that, hey, this is probably never gonna be a career for me. And then I go to college, and I have no clue what I want to do as a career, so I continued taking art classes. Folks, listeners, you do not understand the number of lost art credits I have on my college transcript. They just went into the ether. I took drawing one, drawing two, painting one, painting two, design one, design two, art history, art appreciation, sculpture. Ridiculous. Just absurd amounts of art classes. Until I finally figured out what my career was going to be, and then I took more specific
useful classes, like employable classes.
And I'll tell you, I knew I was not going to be an artist when I was in it was college, my first year of college. I was at a community college here in town. Our teacher, this is painting one, he rolls in a TV, because back then you would have to like literally roll in. It was like the strapped down CRT TV or the tube TV. Mm-hmm. Pops in a VHS or whatever the hell it was. This woman comes on, and she's of course like looks like high school art teacher. Like she's kind of got like a muumuu robe kind of thing on, and she's very crunchy as they say. And she's just like, I am a professional artist. She's like, I don't have a 401k. I don't have health insurance. I don't have a paycheck from week to week. I don't have dependable income. I don't have and she was just going off on all this stuff she doesn't have. But then it was like, but I love my job or something like that. And as she was going down the list of negatives for being I'm an artist, like this is what I do, you could just see all these people who were like, who probably have drawn every day of their lives and painted and were told in art, in high school and junior high, that you're such a great artist. Oh my God, you've always been so good. And then you go to college, and then it's just this. Your teacher puts this video on that is like, this career is hopeless. None of you are ever going to make any money of it. You know what I mean? Like, you can't support your family with it. Like, this is not, like, maybe one of you, maybe the whole class, one of you could actually become a successful artist. The rest of you are just completely shit out of luck. Oh, okay. That's probably the wake up call I needed. Like, that. Okay, that's fine. But it was just hilarious to look around the room and the look on these people's faces, and they're just sort of, they're setting their paintbrushes down or whatever, and they're like, good Lord. In spite of that, not knowing what I wanted to do, and that was why I went to, because I was poor, I went to a community college or junior college to begin with anyways to just take random coursework and figure out what I wanted to do. But as I took all these art classes, you do eventually, they weeded out the folks that probably couldn't have done it. And eventually you meet some people who are some incredible artists, like incredible artists. And some of them are like second generation, third generation artists, where I have a memory of one guy. We were supposed to bring in a canvas to do a painting, and this was in painting two, I think. This guy brought in like a finished painting. Like, it was really, really nice. And he started to just like paint over it. And our teacher walked over and was like, what are you doing? And he was like, I told you to bring in a blank canvas. He's like, oh yeah, my dad just had this one lying around and he told me I could take it, so I just took it to use. And he was like, what? And he was like, who's your dad? And I did not recognize the gentleman's name, and it's also been 20 years, so I don't remember. Anyway, when he said his father's name, and our teacher was like, that's your dad? Oh my God. And then of course you could see this kid's face as soon as he was like, that's your dad, he rolled his eyes, right? Because I'm sure he's heard this a million times. Then he was like, oh yeah, he's my dad. And then it said something like, he's an idiot savant in a wheelchair. And it was was like, what? Like the teacher was like, oh my God. And he was like, no, I'm just joking. And you can tell it's just because he's so tired of hearing people right. brag about how great his dad is. He's just like, Jesus Christ. So, but anyway, so you just meet these weird people and you meet a lot of art school girls. And art school girls for me was always like, wow, man, how, you know, these women who are extremely creative and usually really independent and have these just interesting personalities. And a lot of them were beautiful. And meanwhile, I'm just like, so it's like you do everything. Like you're beautiful. You're smart. You're funny. You've got this incredible artistic side to you that I totally, you know, like I like art. You like art. But none of this stuff's ever actually going to work out because a lot of these women are also kind of strange, right? Because you're artists. Some of these people are just like, they come from strange families. And there was one woman in particular, and she and I got along really well, except she was just like, I could just tell, not only was she eccentric is the word I'm looking for, overly eccentric, outrageously eccentric, so much so that like her dad was an artist and all of her brothers were artists. I think she was the one girl with like several brothers. And when they were kids, their dad always bought them a Trans Am. So they all drove Trans Ams, not like super expensive Trans Am, I mean like base models or used ones and stuff like that. And then he would basically give them like paint and let them paint their own cars. So they all had these like just outrageously custom painted, like, but like brush painted, you know what I mean? Like art cars basically. Mm. And I'm just like, man, that is so weird. And part of you is like, man, I, you know what, you know, maybe if she and I went on a date, we would actually like hit it off. Right. And but then the other part of you is like, there's just no way. Like, this is just I'm too normal. You right. know what I mean? Like, I'm just too normal. And you know, then you see she's got like douchebag boyfriends or whatever like that. And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's going to be the direction that she's living, that direction. I'm going this direction. But you know, you always have the like, what if? And you know, you and I and Mr. Fix-It can't really speak to this because he never tagged along with us, but you and I would love to go and just chill at the Museum of Fine Arts Houston or the Contemporary Art Museum and just go and just walk around and look at the new exhibits and grab something to eat and just kind of like walk around and you're meditating. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. we're two friends. We're not walking around like chatting and stuff like that.
But there is a lot of discussion. One of the things that was nice about you and I going to the stuff like that, because I've tried to do museums with other people, and again, your art school background, we can actually have a discussion about the piece of art. Maybe it doesn't go into like the deep into the weeds, but we're actually will say, well, this, I really like this aspect of it. This is the thing that I don't really work about it. There is a conversation there. It's polite. We're not like disturbing anybody. There's value in all those art classes because you can talk about this stuff at a level of depth that most people can't.
Well, I mean, I try to, and it's nice to go with somebody who is into it. You're into it. You know what I mean? Like, and you drew, right? But you weren't like, you never took taught classes outside of high school or anything like that. So you would be curious about some, you know, questions to me, and I would try and answer them best I can. And I would always be interested in your take on it too. And we would have just like really interesting, because you were taking it seriously. That's what I'm looking for. I was with somebody who took it seriously. It wasn't there tagging along.
And I needed you to explain to me what the Manille, you know, like was it the Manille or Rothko, the black paintings, and why you would have a black painting? Okay.
Rothko Chapel is on the Manille's property. Yeah. And that's what, yeah, exactly. Stuff like that where some people are just like, okay, where are we going next? Or what time are we going to get something to eat? It was, let's stop and see how many individual paintings and sculptures we can just sit there and look at. And then sometimes we go our separate ways and then we'd meet in the middle of the room, you know what I mean? And we'd go back around and talk about which ones we like best. Like, that's what a freaking blast, dude. And unfortunately, time has gotten away from us. We don't get to do that as much as we used to. But that's another thing that always reminds me of this song. It's like, I'm not trying to say you're my art school girl. I'm just saying that, you know what I mean? There's something about, I don't know, there's something about being around art people and people who are interested in that kind of stuff that I feel bad for people who don't. Some people aren't into it. And if you're not into it, that's fine. I'm not trying to sound like I'm holier than thou. If you think that canvases that are all painted in a single color are boring and dumb, I'm not going to be able to change your mind. But I will say that is a reaction, and there's a good chance the artist was just trying to get a reaction out of you, so they won. But anyway, back to the Museum of Fine Arts.
Well, and by the way, that's something you and I both have in common too, is that we both appreciate art, but at the same time, we grew up hard scrabble and we knew that we didn't have a net. And so you had to figure out, okay, but how am I going to get through this life? And especially when you're around art people, which I dabbled with a little bit in my 20s, it's like you see that even unless they've got like a wealthy parent or something, they don't really have lives that you want to emulate. Flaky and desperate, unsustainable. And so you see that, and it's like you enjoy spending time with these folks who get to be, you know, who are creative, and you can have some great conversations, but also you can get into some areas where you're like, wow, that's some wackadoo thought you just had there, and that doesn't have any basis in reality. And
practical purpose, yeah.
Oh, I really enjoyed sitting here for a couple or 3 hours waiting for you to show up because apparently you're on your own time and not objective time and things like that. There's always it's a two-edged sword. So, but the fact that you and I both can appreciate art but also have a firm grounding, it colors our perspective.
Yeah, and that's so anyway, to continue on the Museum of Fine Arts. So now, fast forward, I've always remained a member of the Museum of Fine Arts, even though I don't get to go as often as I want to. They have a Christmas party every year we go to, and they're expanding the hell out of the Museum of Fine Arts, and they've added a school, and they're doing really, really awesome stuff down there. So I like to support the museum. And also, if you remember, some of the big exhibits that come through, they'll give you like a huge discount on and stuff like that. So that's cool. Fast forward. So you and I have been going to the museum since the late 90s, early 2000s. Suddenly, I'm there with my wife and kids. I don't remember if it was for a Christmas party or something. And I see a flyer on a table and I pick it up, and it's talking about young people who are interested in art. If you're in your 20s and 30s, there are like singles groups where you all meet up at the museum on certain days. It gets coordinated and you're all members of the Museum of Fine Arts, and you get to go hang out at the museum all day and socialize and meet all these other single people in your age group that have a similar interest. And I just remember I don't know if I called you or I took a picture of the flyer, and I was like, where the hell was this 23, 24, 20 years ago? You know what I mean? And we've both gone our separate paths, and I think we're pretty happy with our paths, you know what I mean? But it's just like, that was one of those things. It's like, that was it. That's the whole, anytime we were really at the museum,
this was what we wanted. This is the thing that we needed back then. Why didn't you have that available to us then so we could enjoy that, or so that you never got to actually sample that taste? You know, you never got to actually have that experience with having the art school girlfriend. And because of that, there's always that little bit of wanting, no matter how happy you are with your circumstance, not having ever been able to explore it. There's always going to be that little nagging part of you that's like, what if, you know?
Right. And at the same time, I was like, how the hell did we not think of this? Like, how did this take so long to materialize? Because social media has now been around forever. Really? Like, let's say this program's been around for a couple of years. It took till 2019 to figure out that you probably got a lot of people who you could use the museum as an excuse to. What a great way to get people in the museum. You know what I mean? Like, now I'm not just there to look at your collection that I've now seen a million times. I'm there to look at your collection with somebody new. You know what I mean? And then maybe we'll hit it off. Maybe we'll see, you know what I mean? And there's the woulda, coulda, shoulda. We probably could have had some fun times meeting up with random strangers and going to the museum together. But now it's almost like there's probably some new generation of kids out there that I'm just like, dude, how freaking awesome is that? And then there's also the, you know, oh, damn, I wish that was there 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But man, it's just such a cool idea. Folks, support your local museums. And that's my story.
Yeah, I just have to add too that it kills me that I started going to conventions after I entered into a long-term relationship, and it's still, you know, ongoing. So we've been very successful. But it's also like, you guys introduced speed dating at comic conventions, and I never got to do anything with that, you bastard. It's like, okay, you know, you especially if you're a comic book guy, you spend your whole life trying to find a comic book chick, and it's like, oh, they have that now, but it's too late for you, you know?
Yeah. Oh, no. It's for the next generation. Your next sacrifices generation. Are not in vain.
You kids don't know how good you've got it. But then, of course, what happens is you get in there, and you got somebody who's like really like hardcore into this thing that you hate, and you end up not, you know, even though they're so close, they should be able to be, you know, simpatico. This one hates X-Men, and this one hates the Justice League, and you just can't make it work. I'm sure that there's still plenty of reasons for people to sabotage their happiness over dumb stuff.
Or no, it's more like, you like X-Men, she likes X-Men, but she likes X-Men and steampunk, and that's the deal breaker. Go listen to Art School Girl by Stone Temple Pilots. It wasn't a single, and the song is phenomenal. It is so good.
I love that whole album, but it's definitely one of the highlights. And speaking of the long-term relationship, one of the only mixed CDs I ever made for her, I put that on there. She's not an art school girl, clearly, but there's that bit where he's talking about, I told you 5 or 4 times. And Paquita has this thing where she'll do the higher number first. And in the West, we're so big about the sequence and going from lowest to highest when we talk about things like that. And just that bit about, I told you 5 or 4 times, always makes me think of her.
Yeah, it's a great part. It's a great part. 5 or 4.
And it's so one of those weird things. We don't even know what that means, why that song is in there, why that lyric is in there. But sometimes it just takes that little tiny snippet for you to connect to something, and it becomes a thing that's relevant to you. You know, sometimes it's amazing how that one line can make all the difference, which actually segues into mine.
So here's a great part of this song. Because we didn't really go, we went through the 5 or 4 times set of the lyrics, but this is what I'm talking about. This was the woulda, shoulda, coulda, where he says, I got a girlfriend, she goes to parties, underground parties, Andy Warhol everywhere. She wears the leather, I wear the makeup. We'll never break up, been together for a month. And that's exactly how I would picture if I would have dated any of some of those girls. And that's what it would have been. We've been together for, we'll never break up, we've been together for a month. And that's kind of, because that's basically how those relationships would go. It'd probably be on and off again as temperaments change and things like that. I mean, I could relive a relationship I never actually went in with some stand-in art art girl mannequin. And it's like, yeah, that's probably how it would have gone.
You know, if I had been the guy who was going to routinely paint his nails and do makeup and stuff, that could have been cool. I could have worked that. But it's just not who I am at the core. It's like, I'm just too no frills for all that bullshit. I love seeing the art girls and their cool get-ups and everything, but they're just too cool for me. It's too much work. I flash back to High Fidelity, where she's like this goddess, he worships her and everything else, and she talks about how it was so much work to be with him because of his need for constant reassurance and stuff. And I think that the art school girls would have just been a trial for me. It would have just been like an emotional roller coaster trying to live up to the fantasy of that environment. I was never going to be that person. So probably for the most part, I never did.
Absolutely. No, that's it 100%. But to look back, it's always like, oh, what a shoulda, coulda. But I think it's because at the time we were living in the moment, that's what it was. It was like, no, this is completely ridiculous. This is a pipe dream, but you know, whatever.
I did have a little bit of that, but I was always the square, you know, and that was another thing that's kind of a bummer is when you're with somebody who's that artsy and that ethereal transcendent, it makes you aware of how corporeal you are. And when you're around their flaky friends who are rolling, tripping balls and stuff, I couldn't afford to pay the consequences of that kind of lifestyle. They really couldn't either, but I wasn't willing to put myself in the position that they were willing to put themselves in necessarily. So I'm just constantly comparing myself in the sense that they're nuts and weirdos and strung out. I don't have the time for that. I don't have the energy for that. I don't have the resources for that. I'm not that. So why am I around this? You know, it's fun to visit. It's fun to be a tourist in this world, but I could never take up permanent residence here.
Hello, I'm Gary Tintero, director of the Museum of Fine Arts Houston. Each year, hundreds of thousands of visitors engage with our encyclopedic permanent collection of nearly 66,000 objects through exhibitions, educational programming, art instruction, and community outreach. Our museum is one of the largest of its kind in the United States, and therefore the variety of experiences we offer is almost without limit. Our two main gallery buildings present collections from antiquity to the present, with special galleries devoted to the arts of Asia, Europe, and the Americas. The Cullen Sculpture Garden is a one-acre oasis of green space with masterworks of modern and contemporary sculpture. The Glassell School of Art offers classes for students from the pre-kindergarten to the postgraduate level. And nearby, two remarkable house museums, Bayou Bend and Rienzi, provide extraordinary settings for visitors to experience our renowned American and European decorative arts collections.
Brace for this. I don't think you're going to see this one coming. I'm actually glad that Fix isn't here because I'm pretty sure I'd get mocked pretty hardcore. So we're going to be talking about We Can't Stop by Miley Cyrus. Really, my connection to the song comes down to one line. We run things, things don't run we. And it's funny because she actually got sued. They tried to get her to stop selling the song and were suing for like $300 million in damages and all this kind of nutty stuff. And the guy who sued her was this fellow named Florgon, who put out a song in 1988 called We Run Things. And it was a slightly different. It was We Run Things, Things No Run We, because it's reggae. From before this girl was born, I think. Fairly confident that nobody involved with the making of We Can't Stop ever heard that song. So stealing a lyric from it, the case got settled earlier this year. And it's so nuts that somebody could think that they were entitled to money over one line of one song, given especially the current appropriation culture where everybody's remixing stuff and doing like slight variations that are still basically the same damn song, or taking like one loop out of a song and turning a whole song into that. Folks are always trying to get paid. I think it's nuts. But again, it's funny that the reason why that song got sued was the exact reason why that line is relevant to me. We got to go back to the Wayback Machine to the early days of Miley Cyrus. I remember I was working in labor and there was an announcement on the radio in the warehouse I was working at talking about how Hannah Montana had just broken the record for attendance at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. It's hard to explain that to people who are not from our area, but that's like one of the biggest events that happens around Houston. And you're like, the rodeo? You guys are a bunch of cowboys. Like, no. This is a huge business thing. This is where a lot of the business people meet each other and socialize. And you have these gigantic barbecue cook-offs, and they have carnivals, and you have notable music acts throughout. So it's a concert plus cattle. I don't know that that would have traction anywhere else, but it's such a huge part of Houston. We knew we were fucked during the pandemic when they canceled the livestock show after just like 1 week. This thing usually runs, what, about 3 weeks to a month? And that they
yeah,
only...
it's like a solid month.
People were getting sick off of it and freaking out and shutting it down. That was like our Coachella, South by Southwest, which is another Texas thing. Once that kind of big shit that everybody waits all year for gets shut down, you know, the situation's fucking fucked. So this person sells out the show, and I'm like, what the fuck is a Hannah Montana? I do a little bit of research, Disney star, bubblegum bullshit. It just goes to show how the livestock show is trending, that felt like a little bit that the show had gotten sold out as a result. But I didn't think much of this kid. And then a few years later, I think she did the Party in the USA song, and that got a lot of airplay, and she was doing it under her actual name, Miley Cyrus, and people were joking about how she's Billy Ray Cyrus's kid. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I thought the song was cute, but I didn't think much of it. What I actually took note of is that at some point, she tried to get backstage with Radiohead, and Radiohead shut it down. They wouldn't let her backstage, and I just thought it was a gas that these guys were so cool that even like the huge pop store, they were able to cut her out. It's like, no, we don't have time for your silly, you know, selfie bullshit, and just wouldn't let her in. And that always kind of stuck with me. And then a few years later, she got to be legal, and she was trying to break loose of her Disney image, and she did some ridiculous video where she's like a bird in a cage and in provocative outfits and stuff. Okay, there's another Lindsay Lohan. There's another ridiculous performer that's going to try so hard to sell her image so that she can get attention. And look, I'm a grown up now. I can show you my boobies. This is a person that way too young for me to even be paying attention to. I'm certainly not the Disney demographic and haven't ever really been. And so she just was some bit of pop culture ephemera that I figured we're just going to dry up and blow away, essentially. And then this song comes out, We Can't Stop. The album is called Bangers, and I didn't know what a banger was at that time, but I learned pretty quick because the song itself is a banger. It's a really cool tune. It does have a little bit of that reggae lilt to it, so that maybe gives a little bit of validity to the Flourgon lawsuit, but it's its own thing. And later on, it turns out the song was written for Rihanna, and you can hear that. So you could definitely hear her patois if she were had been the one who sung it. And while it was written with her in mind, my understanding is that she never actually heard the song, so it was never officially offered to her.
It's our house, we can love who we want to. It's our song, we can sing if we want to. It's my mouth, I can say what I want to.
That album that she had done had flopped, and she was focusing on her music career, or sorry, her acting career. And so she was just kind of continuing to do that, but that wasn't maybe going as well as it could have either. The couple of movies that she had done after she'd announced she was going to focus on acting hadn't done that well. So I guess she maybe stepped back and decided she needed to, you know, focus on something that's working for her. And right at that particular moment in time, maybe nothing was working for her. Completely rejiggers her image for Bangers. Close cropped hair on the sides, the tight white outfits, the ridiculous crooked tongue thing, the teddy bears, all that weird iconography that she came up with for that. All of a sudden, she was like the cautionary tale. She was like, you know, the one that the dads were afraid their daughters were going to take to. And it worked. She was huge for a while there. She performed the song for the VMAs with Robin Thicke, and it was a very provocative demonstration. It was basically the modern Madonna Like a Virgin performance, still seen as something that, you know, oh, she took it too far. This is the point where I broke from Miley, yada, yada, yada. But it doesn't stop the fact that this is a really great song. And then she comes around a few months later with with Wrecking Ball, which is just this enormous hit. It goes like number one or number two. That's another one where the iconography of that, Terry Richardson did that video before everybody knew he was super rapey, which is weird because we always kind of knew that. It really wasn't a surprise. I mean, this is a guy who takes pictures of himself having sex with his models, so it really shouldn't come as a surprise that he was sexually harassing people and finally ended his career. But that was sort of like this last thing he got to do before they came for him, essentially. Very stark imagery, white background, the Wrecking Ball. Now she's running around with a sledgehammer while wearing undergarments. It's ridiculous. I remember in particular they did that lip sync battle, and one of the ways they launched that was Anne Hathaway actually swung out on a mock Wrecking Ball during her performance. But getting back to this one, you know, it was a good song. I enjoyed it. And there was that one line, "We run things, things don't run we." And for some reason that resonated with me, I think because of the work that I do. There's always people coming at you trying to demand your time, demand that you do things the way they want it done, and yada yada. No, you don't tell me how I'm going to do this. What I do is stressful. What I do takes knowledge. It takes experience. It takes a lot of things. I know what I need to do this job. You don't tell me how I'm going to do this job. Pretty experienced now. I've been doing this for a while. And so when Padawans, when the young ones come in to me and they're talking about, and not even just the young ones, also some of the ones that are my contemporaries that maybe don't have the same time management skills or people management skills, they'll come to me and they'll be talking about all the pressure they're under and everybody wants everything from them and everything wants all at once and how it's driving them nuts. And I'm this old dude who comes out with this chestnut about we run things, things don't run we. And it's funny because oftentimes I'll be talking to like a young girl or something and they grew up in the Miley Cyrus generation and perhaps nothing else I would have said would have necessarily gotten traction, but because of they actually know what I'm referencing, it often gets a laugh and sometimes it actually gets traction in the brain. I can see them changing how they do the job. If the president tells a soldier to shoot somebody, if that person shoots that person, they're still going to go to jail. You know, they're still going to be tried because it doesn't matter who gave you these marching orders. At some point, you have to take responsibility for that action. You guys are not doing what you need to do, and it doesn't matter how much more education you have than me or how much more experience or how much higher you are in the food chain, how important you are. If I say we stop now, we stop now, and it doesn't start again until I say so, or you get somebody else in here who's going to take responsibility for the shit that you guys are trying to pull. So the rest of the song is just a goof. It's about partying. I'm sure you've seen the video. We've probably all seen the French fry head that gets smashed and the girl who cuts her fingers and bleeds Pepto-Bismol. And I think it was Miley Cyrus who gets that one really bad kick to the head. You're like, damn, you guys need to settle down. It's a messy video about people just partying and doing drugs. It was a total image change for her, especially when she's running around like gyrating on couches and she's covered in tattoos and stuff. She made sure everybody knew I'm not the little girl anymore, even though, you know, this has been nearly a decade that this song's been out and she still hasn't hit 30 yet. So it's like, good Lord. And she actually recently came out with a video where it shows the aftermath of that party, where all the trash is strewn all about and floating in the pool, and showing that you can't maintain the lifestyle that's being not necessarily advocated in the song, but that's being observed. I'm just here for the taking control of your life and taking charge and making sure that you are always cognizant that we run things. Things don't run we.
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, I'm not going to pretend like I'm some sort of Miley Cyrus connoisseur because I'm not. But I think the line itself is really good. And I mean, you can apply it to anything. You can apply it to relationships. You can apply it to friendships. You can apply it to work, where at some point you got to draw a line because, like you said, the shit rolls downhill. So the person who tells you to make that decision is probably telling you to do it because you're going to be the one who gets in trouble. You're going to pay the negative consequence. And if everything goes right, they're going to get the reward for it. I mean, you got to pick your battles, but it's certainly something to remember that sometimes it's okay, even though that, you know, someone's a superior or someone has maybe some power over you, to every now and then you got to be like, no, like, not happening. It stopped. You want to go ask somebody else, go ask somebody else. But just so you know, since I could see it's wrong, now you know. When you go to the next person to ask them, that's going to be in your head too. I think it's a valuable lesson. I think, and like you said, you were explaining to some young folks. Again, we're talking like we're extremely old or whatever, but we've been in professional settings for a very long time, and non-professional, and relationships and friendships and stuff like that. And it is something that it's hard for someone who's a little more naive and a little more unseasoned to do, is to sometimes just be like, no. There's smart places to draw the line, and there's some not so smart places to draw the line, but there is a line. You shouldn't be kowtowing. I don't think I've ever used that turn of phrase before. Anyway, somebody should know, I can't ask him because I know, like, I know he's going to say no, or she's going to say no. Like, you know what I mean? If you're not putting off that, or, I mean, maybe, look, it's nuanced, okay? You can work somewhere and be a kiss ass, but, you know, because I think kissing ass is good. You should kiss ass at work every now and then, but you shouldn't be the one where it's like, oh, I know this guy will do it because he's just going to roll over and listen to everything I say. I think at that point you're a tool.
Yeah,
and nobody's going to really have any respect for you. But that's why it's up to some of us, some of the elders, to make sure people know. Don't let people fucking push you around like that. You're a professional. You earned your shit here too.
The song is about empowerment and about a willingness to take, you know, that power, even though you might be misusing it. You may not be the best person to be in power, but taking back your power, recognizing that sometimes there is, in a particular moment, it's okay to eat a sandwich on white bread stuffed with $100 bills. It's not necessarily universally applicable, but sometimes in the moment you can make a pile of white bread, a mountain out of it, and that's okay because that's what you need in that particular moment in time.
I kind of want to go watch this video now.
You've seen the video, haven't you?
I seriously doubt it. Can we talk about Miley Cyrus for a second?
Sure.
So here, it's very funny that you mentioned this, like hilarious. And now I'm really glad Mr. Fixit's not here because his mind would explode and implode with the statement I'm about to say. I listened to a Joe Rogan podcast with Miley Cyrus that came out yesterday, sir. Came out yesterday.
Relevance.
I listened to an hour and 50 minutes of a 2 hour and 15 minute Joe Rogan podcast with Miley Cyrus. And it was, I gotta tell you, man, she's not the most interesting bird on the street, dude. Like I don't know. Sometimes I think some people, when they get so famous, are just like, everybody loves Keanu Reeves, right? Do you really think Keanu Reeves would be great in like a 2 hour long video where he's supposed to kind of open up and be like, I don't think so.
Keanu Reeves has been a chatty guy.
No, I think he's just been so famous for so long. He's not going to and a lot of these people are guarded too. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I'm supposed to open up in an interview. Like, this would be kind of weird. Like, that's kind of what it was like.
I guarantee you Keanu Reeves is the guy where if you want to talk about motorcycle restoration and stuff, he could probably do a couple hours on that easy.
Hell yes, right.
But if you're in their zone, then you're fine. But once you start trying to talk about stuff that they're not comfortable with, they will just shut down him especially.
Yeah, so that's it kind of turned into like an hour. It was like I said, I listened to an hour and 45 and I was like, why have I done this? I should have been watching freaking Briscoe County Jr. all day. Like, this is out of freaking control. So then she's just like, it just turned into this, oh yeah, I did all these drugs and I did this and I did that. And she's like, but you know what? We're rich. You know, I'm rich. She can only get into so much trouble because she's just so rich. Mm-hmm. And her dad was rich. She was rich growing up. And then she was rich on the Disney Channel. And now she's rich because she's super popular with all this stuff. So yeah, she did a lot of drugs and stuff, but she is rich and she can kind of afford to screw up. And a lot of people don't get the, and now she kind of admitted that too. She was like, look, I can afford to screw up. I'm rich. People kind of leave me alone or whatever. She gets a lot of extra chances that a lot of people wouldn't get. But man, it was tired here. Once we went through another story where she got to reflect that, I was like, man, she's told the same anecdote like five different times in different ways. I'm like, oh, this is an awful interview. Like, this is terrible, dude. It only would get interesting where she would drop some anecdotes about Dolly Parton, who's her godmother. Mm-hmm. Outside of that.
She did a really nice cover of Jolene, too, by the way.
Yeah, and that came up. Yeah, it was not good.
Well, and again, she did become something of an object of ridicule after the VMAs in particular, because she was just so hypersexualized. But I'll always respect her because she did what she wanted to do, what she expressed who she was in the way that she wanted to do it. You know, and I'm sure it was a freaking blast, that song that she came out with last year. I think it's called Slide or something, or Just Slide. And showing, you know, well, that was cool when I was 20. I'm pushing 30 now. I can't be doing this shit anymore. I've moved on from that. It's probably great to have had that experience, and it's probably a blast, but also it gets to be a little sordid and a little tired, and you start to feel a little grimy after a while doing that. And what I think back to is somebody like a Taylor Swift, who's always maintained this pristine image. You know, every album was about the relationship that didn't work, and she was always dating these famous guys, and relationships always sputtered out almost immediately. And of course, I always go back to, well, at some point, it's kind of about you, isn't it? You know, it's like, if it's nothing but one failed relationship after another, that's probably your problem. Maybe you need to do a little bit more Molly, and, you know, things might move along a little bit better. But what I'm reminded of is that people were on her for years to express political sentiment, particularly to denounce Donald Trump, because she became this like Aryan icon, like the alt-right and the white supremacists and stuff saw her as this Aryan goddess who was on their side and somebody who would carry their banner and stuff, and that her silence on activities around Trump, for instance, showed that she was actually on their side. And it took until like a year or two ago for her to finally say, no, that's not who I am. That's not what I represent. And you feel like there's an element of that being focus tested because she's somebody who just wants to be everything to all people. The future is not in things like white supremacy. Not calling it out was going to eventually hurt her, and she did finally speak out against some things. But it seemed like she was really late to the party. I appreciate that she finally did express some political sentiment, but it took her a while. And I do think that Miley was always much more open about, this is wrong, and I support, you know, people of color, and admittedly appropriate for people of color, and acknowledging, take advantage of the white privilege that I have. You know, all this kind of stuff. I like that she owns that, and I do think that it hurt her career, and I do think that's one of the reasons why you've got a Taylor Swift who's still like this enormous pop culture figure, where Miley is somebody who's got her fan base, but she's more like the Britney Spears era, you know, like I don't even think she has that level of devotion that the Spears people have. But I do think that she benefited from just being that open because everybody knows what side that she was on. And she did get to do all those drugs and do all that partying and have all that sex. And, you know, she's on the other side of that now. But I think she probably had a pretty good time with it. And she wasn't having to hide who she really was all those years. Still look at Taylor Swift as somebody who's like a Mariah Carey meltdown waiting to happen. Somebody who's just, you know, was so suppressed for so long and trying so hard to just be everything to everyone that I do think that there's going to be a personal toll that is taken because of those choices that she made or lack of choices that she voiced.
Yeah, well, listen, it sounded from the interview, though, at least she's kind of gotten over that some. Like the sex stuff is going to be part of her image. That's just sort of what she's done that so long now. That's going to be kind of part of it. But it sounds like maybe the drugs and stuff, maybe she's chilled out. I don't know. I don't really care. I don't really care. Rest assured, Diablo Frank, your girl, Miley, I think she's turned around some of the harder stuff she's been up to. She's going to do whatever she's going to do.
We went so much longer on a Miley Cyrus segment than I ever thought was going to happen.
And Edit all of that out.
And what's funny, too, is I was trying really hard not to ever go political with it because I had a whole thing about that I just barely touched on. And then we managed to come around and make it a little bit more political regardless of my intentions. I just can't help it. It's who I am.
Yeah, that was a weird tangent.
I'm going to tattoo a dream catcher under my armpit or something now.
That wraps things up for us as we head into the romance hour. Just want to give some shout outs to the 108th Sage, Between the Pages, Del Dracula, Delvin, Iowa's Joe Crawford, Keith G. Baker, King Dinosaur, Christados, Longbox Crusade, Mike at Send Aliens to Me, Randy Caldwell, Richard G., Ryan Daly, Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace Podcast, and Zach Sally.
Rodeo Houston. Hey, hey, hey. Don't wanna be a wild, wild ride.
And now it's time for the House of Love.
Good evening, lovers. I am Mark the Hump Humphreys, a.k.a. the Love Mouth, keeping you company this Valentine's Day.
This love connection. Do you have a message you want to send out to somebody?
Sorry, Pussycat. I still feel guilty still sometimes about that.
Yeah, you should. You definitely... But I I spent months hearing her side of the story. Yes, you should. But at the same time, and I've said this many a times, your relationship had gotten toxic and it had stagnated and you both needed to get the fuck away from each other so you could progress as adults in your lives or you'd have just continued to be stuck. So I it was the right call ultimately for both of you.
I have to go.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I got a second.
Okay. Everything okay? What happened? Oh, okay. All right, bro. Well, we can finish this one another day.
Well, that's our program for the last 16 and a half years. Thank you so much for supporting it and being a part of it. It's been one heck of a ride.
Yeah, it's funny you started talking about how you were kind of in that relationship. That would have tied into my next or my plan B, one song each for another time. That I said this would be going to be the shorter one, and it's totally not. But anyways, that's a little foreshadowing for a future episode of One Song Each.
And cut.
All right, let's do another one tomorrow.
One Song Each is a Rolled Spine podcast. This is a not-for-profit fan production. Any copyrighted materials used is believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended. Please leave your comments and criticisms on our website. We especially encourage participation on this show. Feel free to call in and leave a request. Maybe you'll even get featured on the show. We thank you for your rapt attention.